Mitzvah Tuf Chaf Beis, 422, Mitzvah Tfilin Shel Rosh, the Mitzvah of Tfilin on the head, as opposed to the Mitzvah Tfilin on the arm, which we were learning about in the last Mitzvah. L'anich Tfilin Al HaRosh, there's supposed to put Tfilin on our head. Shenemar, Vayulito Tavos Beinanech, and there should be a sign between your eyes. Inego Safti Mitzvah Kodemes, Ma'winyin Tfilin. I explained in the last Mitzvah what's going on with Tfilin. Shu arba parshias haksuvas batorah. There are four different paragraphs that are a part of the Chumash. Beseder boel paro, beseder vayaschanu, beseder vayaekev. Two in Sefer Shmos, and there's a week's parsha that's upcoming, and two in Sefer Dvarim, one in vayaschanu, one in Ekev. Nistavino lichtov avra parshios elu beklaf. All these four parshios have written beklaf. We know there are three types of skins that we discussed: gvil, klaf, and duchsustos. So the gvil is the whole skin, and klaf and duchsustis are two different sides of the skin. So tefillin are kosher only in klaf. You're not allowed to write tefillin on gvil, you're not allowed to write tefillin on duchsustis, so we got to be pretty sure that whatever we're using for tefillin has a din of klaf. We have to put it on our heads, between our eyes. Valzureinu keneged halev. So again, he'll explain later, when it says Vayulato Tavos Beinecha, it doesn't mean that it's literally supposed to be over here between your eyes. It means that it's supposed to be on your head in the area that's centered between your eye area. And it also doesn't literally mean that you put it on your hand, but rather it means you put it on your arm. The whole thing could be called Yad, or there are a lot of different terms. In English, we have very specific anatomical terms for different body parts. So this is arm, and this is hand. So yad in Hebrew could refer to either, but there's also another word called zeroa, which refers only to the arm, and then you have a shaila as to which part. Sometimes a zeroa refers specifically to the upper part of the arm above the elbow as opposed to below the arm. So, and then you can have this little bit of flexibility in terms of terminology. So our tradition is that we put the tefillin on the upper arm. Vinyan Barba Parshas Elios or Mishar Parshas Shel Torah. So why don't we just put the Ten Commandments or something in the tefillin, as certain sects in the times of Bayesheni did? They had different parshas that they put in their tefillin. But our tradition is that we put only the parshas in tefillin that discuss the mitzvah of tefillin. Levishyesh be'elu kabbalos malchus shamayim. That in addition to the fact that it represents the mitzvah of tefillin, as mentioned in all these four parshas. So Shema, of course, one of the central precepts of the Torah, that paragraph. Ve'achdus Hashem, and the unity of God. Ve'inyin yetzias Mitzrayim, and the first two parshas of the tefillin discuss the Exodus from Egypt, which is the foundation of our faith and origins as a united people. Ve'inyin yetzias Mitzrayim, shu machriach emunas chidash ha'olam, v'shkochas Hashem betachtonim. So, the idea of the Exodus from Egypt is a one-step process. If you accept the Exodus from Egypt, that means you deny the idea that Olam Kadmon, that the world, the universe has always existed, which was espoused by certain Greek philosophers. And you also reject the idea that, like deism, that God God exists and created the world, but like wound it like a clock and then let it go. No longer intervenes in the world. So the Yetzias Mitzrayim denies both things. Ve'elam Yesodos Das Yehudis. This is the foundation of the Jewish religion. V'lechein Yitztavinu Aniach Yesodos Eilu Kol Hayom. You got to wear tefillin all day long. Again, that's the main kiyom of the mitzvah tefillin. You're supposed to wear it all day. Nowadays we associate it with davening, but originally it's supposed to be worn all day long. Kol hayom beinenu, between our eyes, va'aluach libeinu. We write it figuratively on the board of our heart. So we have it sitting here, so it's as if we're writing it on our hearts the whole day. So we really, really internalize it. Kishnei ele ho'ayvarim, these two body parts. Yom ruchach me'ateva shehen mishkan haseichel. That the heart and the brain are the houses of the intellect and the mind. So we know that nowadays it's not exactly true that we refer figuratively to our hearts. You feel it in your heart, and you so something like that. But or your heart tells you that you should do this. But we know that the heart just pumps blood, and it doesn't really house mind or mental functioning. But okay, nevertheless, it's we go by Lashon B'nei Adam, we go by how people view it, and since we view the heart as a central part of the body, which it is physically, then it makes sense that the tefillin should be there, but it certainly makes sense that they should be sitting on the brain and the head, which is certainly the housing house of the mind and intellectual functioning. So it not only, if you want to go even more rationalistic, and we want to not talk about the idea that the mind might be resting in the heart, but if we don't talk so much about the heart aspect, but rather the fact that the tefillin are bound on our hand, on our arms, so it's an indication that we're supposed to make sure that everything we do with our hand, everything, every action that we undertake during the day, should be bound, literally, should be restrained, constrained by the precepts of the Torah.
You say b'chol levavcha with your heart.
Okay, that's how people think of it. It doesn't literally mean that the heart has neurons that are functioning to... it's the way people talk, yeah.
But let's just start with this. You might want to get to this anyway. But what is it with the second bracha we make, al mitzvahs, to fill in?
So the Gemara says that you make two brachas on tefillin, one on the shel yad and one on the shel rosh. So the question is, so it says if you put on just the shel yad, you make one bracha, but if you put on the shel rosh, you make two brachas. So it's a huge machlokes rishonim what that means. So according to some rishonim, which is a bit bolstered by the way the Tosefta presents it, is that if you put on both tefillin, you just make the first bracha laniach tefillin, and you don't make the bracha al mitzvah tefillin on the shel rosh unless one of two things. You're mafsik, which you're not allowed to do, unless you have an interruption between the putting on of the shel yad and the shel rosh, or you're only putting on the shel rosh. Either your arm is bandaged up and you can't put on arm tefillin, or you don't own arm tefillin, or you have no arm, or whatever the case may be, and you're only putting on the head tefillin, then you should put on the shel rosh just with a bracha of al mitzvah tefillin. But according, that's the current minhag of Sfardim. The Vilna Gaon also baskling like that, but it's the current minhag of Sfardim that they make only one bracha on both tefillin when they put on both tefillin together. So Ashkenazim go like the other Rishonim that hold that you always make a bracha on each of the two tefillin, but if you put on the shel rosh only, you make two brachas on the shel rosh. You make laniach tefillin and al mitzvah tefillin. Again, most people don't do that because most people don't put on just the shel rosh.
If someone has no arm, are they patur from shel yad?
Yeah, how can you put it on? Yeah. If you have, again, below, if you have no arm, even from the shoulder, if you have no arm below the, if you have at least to the elbow, then you would put on just there. Yeah.
So why do we say brosh shank for most of the,
That's just because... even though we don't really think it's a bracha levatale, because we paskin our minay is that we do say al mitzvah tefillin on the shel rosh always. Nevertheless, since there are a lot of shitas that hold that you're not supposed to make that bracha when you're putting on both tefillin, so just as a to make nice to those opinions, so we say baruch shem kod malchuso, which saves us from a potential bracha levatale of making the second bracha on the shel rosh.
It shows a failure of confidence from the post team who say you have two brachas.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yes, that there is an argument like that, but nevertheless, that's the regular practice that you make. But you say Baruch Shem Kvod Malchuso afterwards. In fact, what you say is reflected in a comment of Rabbi Kiva Eger that somebody wanted to say, "What should we do in order to be yotzei both shitas?" So you should do like this. You should put on the shell. When you put on the shell yad, you should have in mind when you make the laniach tefillin that you only want it to cover the shell yad and you don't want it to cover the shell rosh. If the halacha is that you're supposed to make only one bracha, but if the halacha is that you're supposed to make two brachas, then you do want it to cover the shell rosh, and you're going to make the additional bracha on the shell rosh as well. So Rabbi Kiva Eger writes that one should not do this because it will lead to a lack of confidence in our received tradition of how we make bracha. So that idea is reflected, but nevertheless, the Baruch Shem Yigvah Malchuso business has been accepted from an earlier point than Rabbi Kiva Eger.
If like someone had a prosthetic arm, that would still be a pater from...
yeah, that wouldn't count. Prosthetic arm is not it's not part of your body, no. Fine. Uvanichenu aleihem dvarim elu lezikaro nischazik b'hem v'nosif zecher b'darchi Hashem v'nizke lechaye ad. That when we put things that remind us and to strengthen us about these precepts, when we have them literally weighing on us the whole day, then we're going to internalize it more, and we will get Olam Haba, because we'll really commune with God. Uktzas dinei atfilin ksuvin lamala b'shalyad. We discussed some of the halachas when we're discussing the shalyad. Now that we're discussing specifically the Shal Rosh, I'm going to explain to you how the two are different. The bias of the arm tefillin, osin oso bias echad, it's only one compartment. You put all the parshias on one scroll, and you put it in this one box, and you're good to go. Interestingly, even though there is a shita in the Gemara like that, we don't paskin like that shita. And we, yes, but if we would actually hold that, the whole thing goes by the bias. So in other words, if you wrote the Shel Yad on four different klafin, each parsha on four different klafin, but you inserted them all in one bias, so we hold that that would be kosher. Lechatchila, you're supposed to write it all in one klaf, or at least sew them or glue them together, but even if you didn't, it would still be kosher. The Or Shel Rosh Oshin Oso Choluk Larba Batim. So you have a seeming contradiction in the text of the Chumash, that in the first parsha that discusses Tefillin, it says Lezikaron Beinei Necha, that the Tefillin should be a remembrance, which was in the singular between your eyes, and in the other three parshas it says Totofos Beinei Necha, it should be signs in the plural. So how do we reconcile these two things? That in one, the one parsha it says in the singular zikaron, and the other three parshas it says ula totafos. So the answer is that you have four compartments, but all in one piece of leather. That you have the four batim, again, one piece of leather, but divided into four compartments. Uvechol echad manichen parsha achas me'arba parshios elu. And in each of these compartments, you put in one parsha. Yeah.
Is the word totafos? Is that actually found anyplace else, or is it
not in the Tanakh? No, I think Alpi etymology it does mean something like frontlets or amulet sign, something like that. Is that designate some sort of
African word like Rashi?
Oh, Rashi says yes. Rashi says that in some language that Rashi is talking about that we don't know what it is. He says tat means two in one language, and pat means two in another language. So totafos, when you combine the tat and the pat, you get to four. Four parshias. Okay. Mm-hmm. Seder. So the shaila is, when you have the shel rosh divided into four compartments, so how divided do they have to be? So the Gemara brings two lashonos. One is that the compartment has to reach down all the way to the bottom. And the other lashon is that it just has to be, the two Amoraim actually, who have this different opinions, that as long as there is it's recognizable on the top that there are four different divisions, then that would be acceptable. The divider between the four compartments doesn't have to reach all the way down to the bottom, close to where the stitches are. So lemaisa, we fundamentally most rishonim pasuk like the opinion that it does not have to be divided all the way down to the bottom. But we try to accommodate the other opinion as well, and we assume that there, even according to the other opinion, there's a mitzvah to do that. It's preferable to do that, which is why you have batim nowadays. They, if you look, you can see that there's a division all the way down to the bottom. Oh, so here we have a picture of a bias in a raw state and not in the nicely pressed way that everybody knows it. So they're made this way. They have four different compartments, and they go down all the way. So the question is, are you allowed to glue them together? So you have a problem on the one hand. If you glue them together, then perhaps the glue makes them be considered like all connected, and now it's considered like one compartment. They're no longer considered four compartments if you glue them together. That's a one opinion. The other side is, the Chasam Sofer writes like this, that if you don't glue them together, then there's a chance they're going to start to spread, and then the tefillin won't be square anymore. So many poskim disagree with the Chasam Sofer. Say even if they spread a little bit, it's okay. As long as if you would squeeze them together, they would be square. That's also acceptable. But nowadays, people have come up with all these eitzes. The batemacher is always working on new methods to try to make it that the four compartments are completely separate without any glue in between, and that they won't spread. So they have patentim, as you say in Hebrew. They have in modern Hebrew. They have tricks of how they construct the batim that will make them stay together and will not spread apart, but while remaining completely separate.
This is so much of an issue now that we make it of a gazos, you know, because the
it's still an issue, yeah, sure.
It's still an issue, all right.
Yeah, it can still spread. It's getting better. But and some poskim allow that if you put a little bit of glue, it's okay, as long as it's not mamish glued up. If it's just a little, you know, it goes up only a little bit, then it's still fine. But it's a commonly accepted chumra nowadays to try to get batim that are completely separate, that have no glue in between the four compartments. In fact, there are some poskim, famous, the Vilna Gaon and the Shagas Aryeh, both held that the Shel Rosh were not allowed to have any glue in the middle. And some say more than that. Some Rishonim write that they shouldn't even be pressed together. It should be that you could actually stick something in between easily. And maybe even see a little light in between, so that they're clearly designated as separate. There are people who are trying to do this with batim nowadays. It's difficult to make them square and still have light in between and still be able to put something through. So you have all these different competing types of hakpodis. But hopefully they'll keep getting better, and these types of batim will become more commonplace. In fact, the Vilna Gaon and the Shagas Aryeh was supported by Rav Chaim Volozhiner, who knew both of them, was student of both of them, that they held so strongly that the tefillin shel rosh were not allowed to have any glue together. That they used to go over to people in shul in the morning who were wearing, they could see that the tefillin shel rosh were glued together. They were mamish pressed together and glued. Used to go over to people and say, "Why are you wearing your shel yad on your head?" So that's okay. So they held very strongly.
So
but
how do they keep it nowadays pressed without glue?
I'm not a batemacher. I don't know the exact methods, but they have developed ways. They have to press it in a certain way. They have to make the.
Can they sew it with gedim?
No. That would be considered together. No, the gedim are not supposed to be there. And it has to do with how they construct the base, and if they make it a little bit higher on the sides, it bends in a little bit, and it places pressure on the batim to keep them together. Different ways that they do it. Okay. The or shel rosh, so it has to be four batim. You put the each parsha separately in each of the four compartments. So also he could go in Zeh. Here I have a nice picture. Do you have a nice picture?
No.
Yeah, you have a picture, sure. Yeah, you have the art scroll.
Yeah, right.
But here I have a picture, and you don't have a picture. Okay. The Osin min or beodenu rotov demus shin im shlosh rashim yamin amaniach hatfilin b'shin im arba rashim yismol hamaniach. So when batim were made of thinner skin, of dakos, so they used to wet the skin, you know, make it pliable. Then they would have a mold with four heads. And they would shove it on the mold, and they would fold it over and make it to the shape of a bias, and that would be it. But there would be little creases on the sides that would be able to be pliable into the form of a shin. You would take little tweezers or something and may fold it into the shape of a shin. They move these folds into the shape of a shin while the skin was still wet and pliable. So nowadays that we have gasos tefillin, it doesn't do that. If you can see the picture over there, so there are no creases like that in the tefillin. So you have to artificially wet it. And then you have to use a tool to coax out the shape of a shin from the on the sides. So it says that it's supposed to be three on the right side and four on the left side of the person putting on the tefillin. But it's interesting that if you switched it, it's still kosher.
Wait a second. A shin with four heads isn't the kosher shin in any place else, right?
This is unique.
And if in the Sefer Torah it's four heads, it's possible.
Pashtus, yeah. Yeah. That's a special halacha. That's how it's supposed to look over here. Umachnisim Ritzuas Harosh Besoch Oso Haor Haodef Besof HaBayis. You have the little place for the strap at the back of the bayis. Bushikorin Osochachom in Ma'aboris or a Ma'abarta. Kilomer Sha Ma'virin Boha Ritzua. That's where you put the strap through. V'achar kach, makifin min ha-ratzua kishir ha-rosh shel maniach. You measure the size of the head of the person wearing the tefillin. V'osin b'oso mokum kesher echad ha-osli b'tzuras dalet. We explained last time the different minhagim about the, not the last time, but before, the different minhagim about how to make the kesher shel rosh. It should look dalet-ish. V'zos ha-tzura iev shel etzaira b'michtav. I can't draw it for you. Why not? Can't draw a knot. He drew a whole whole diagram of the bat.
Yeah, I've seen that.
It is odd, but okay. Aval kol echad melamda letalmidav. You all have to teach your students how to make the kesher. It's a very pretty easy. Biduahu beinenu amakodesh v'zeu kesher tefillin she'amar chachamim zichronim livracha. That the Gemara Maseches Chulin famously says that a talmid chacham is supposed to learn how to do practical things. That it shouldn't be that the Talmud Chacham should just sit in the Beis Medrash and imagine how things are. So one of my Safra's teachers was talking about how he was once sitting in a Beis Medrash and overhearing a Chavrusa Shaft. They were discussing ink. They came across a sugya that was discussing ink, different ingredients of ink. So they said, oh, it must be like this and like this and like this. And if you put this ingredient and it changes this color, he's like, you have no idea what you're talking about. You're reading these texts and you're trying to imagine what it's talking about, but you have to have a hands-on experience. And it's insufficient just to read texts, and you have to know how to implement Judaism practically. You have to learn. He does not get mentioned here, but he does. He mentioned Kitab. Sorry. Umanu also im sharet varim gamkin shamra alein shiroi leida osan al kalpanim. So in addition to the how to make the knot of the tefillin, v'hein ksav, you're supposed to learn how to write your name at least. It wasn't so pushing that everybody knew how to write, even if they knew how to read. They didn't have experience writing their names. We have stories in the Gemara that even Amoraim used to, obviously know how to read, but they used to, instead of signing their names, used to draw pictures. That would be their signature. They would draw a picture of a boat or something. Would be their signature.
No, I once was an aide for Ksuva, and all of a sudden I sort of panic. Wait a second! How was it so long since I signed my name? And
exactly. So we have to keep in touch with how to sign our names. Okay, Ushchita. You have to learn Shchita. So yeah, the reason I learned Safras and not Shchita so far is that the Safras is something that I can do, you know, at home, on my own time. You know, it's something you could, even if you're learning the hands-on experience, you don't need you need equipment, but you could do it at home. So Shchita, you have to go out to slaughterhouses, and you have to practice, and you have to make time to, you have to coordinate with a slaughterhouse when they can afford to have people practicing there. It's not so bushed. So even though everyone should learn Shchita, if you want to be a Talmid Chacham, you should learn how to practically shecht. It's a very good skill to have. Especially when certain animals that you might want to eat are not available from the commercial shchitos. So it's very limited, very limited. So if you want to eat goose, so the commercial companies don't shecht the goose that often. So if you want to shecht the goose, you have to buy a goose, and you should be able to shecht it yourself. She'll learn malicha. Everyone should learn, then you have to learn how to do the malicha. I was mentioning when I was talking about Erev Yom Kippur, so that Rev Belsky, every year, Erev Yom Kippur, when he used to do Kaparis, so he used to take the opportunity to teach his daughters, at least, how to do Malicha. Because otherwise, now that the salting is done for you in the slaughterhouse, so nobody knows how to do it anymore. The whole Mesorah of mother to daughter of how to do Malicha is going to get lost. So Rev Belsky used to teach his daughters, Erev Yom Kippur, or during the Aseres Meitshuva, how to do Malicha to make sure that they knew how to do it. Umila, that's another thing I haven't learned yet, but to do Mila is very, very important. Apparently, the main program of how to learn Mila is in London. They have a master, Moel, who teaches people how to do Mila in London, because they have a very large and concentrated Muslim population that wants to do circumcision. So they don't care who does it, as long as it gets done. Here in Judaism, we have a rule derived from Hamol Yimol, that only someone who is chayiv in mila, meaning a Jewish person, because some sheet this applies to a woman also, because in theory she's a shayach to the mitzvah, even though she doesn't have the anatomy that would allow it. But only in Judaism, only a Jew is allowed to perform mila. But in, I guess, Muslims don't care about that, as long as the end result is the same. So they practice on a lot of Muslims.
I think the royal family, I've heard actually that their men have always had mila from from oil.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know where I heard that or how reliable it is, but
Uh-huh.
And that story where Tzipora did the mila on.
Right. So that's one of the riots that a woman could do mila.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the normal minag is that you don't, obviously. That it's usually a man who does mila in the vast majority of cases. I'll say the Orthodox community probably 100%. Yeah, otherwise it's very hard to learn mila because it's nobody wants you to practice on one.
In Israel, it certainly must be.
Israel.
Adult,
yeah.
Adult circumcision, in fact, is
because of the Russians.
Because of the Russians, and in fact, when they had they taught that to the Africans how to do it because. They found out that...
Oh, the HIV, yeah.
HIV, yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, and I'm sure in Eretz Yisrael, but it's also a family business. If you just hear, the Katzensteins are teaching their kids how to do it, but if you want to, if you decide, a random person decides he wants to become a mole, so it's very difficult to break in, so to speak. Okay. Obirkas chasanim, you have to learn how to say Sheva Brachas. What if they call on you to recite Sheva Brachas? You need to know how to say it. But tzitzis, and you have to learn how to make tzitzis. Making tzitzis, by the way, you should know, is extremely, extremely easy. I'm not very handy by nature. So it took me a little while when I was learning Safra, so I had to do it. Otherwise, somebody comes to you and there's a sofa and says, can you make this knot? So obviously I have to know how to do it. It took me a little while to figure out all the knots. The one knot that I still haven't figured out, that I still don't know how to do by heart, is the Chabad Kesher Shel Yad. Of the Tefillin Shel Yad, which I get asked to do maybe once every couple of years. I still don't know how to do it. I have to spend a long time. I'm getting faster a little bit, but I have to look up a video or instructions of how to make the knot. It's completely different.
Not on the
Shel Yad, yeah.
What's the difference?
The difference is that the knot is ours. You have just the loop, and then you have the strap going up and down when you want to, you widen it when you want to take it off, and you tighten it when you want to put it on. Because we paskin like Rabbeinu Tam, that when it says Ukshartam Laos Al Yodecha, that doesn't mean that you have to make the knot, but it means that you just have to tighten it. The Hiduk is also called making the knot. So Chabad wants to be Choshesh, what they consider this, a fulfillment of the alternate opinion in Toisus of Rabbeinu Eliyahu, which holds that you have to make the knot anew every day. So in their knot, the loop itself changes size. So it gets big when you want to take the tefillin off, and then you tighten the loop, and the loop gets smaller and smaller and smaller and closes in on the strap. So by the end, you have the loop hugging the strap. So that's the shita of Chabad, because they think that's Yotzei Rabbeinu Eliyahu. Whether this not is Rabbeinu Eliyahu really out of mind, I don't know. But that's the way they do it, but it's just...
How do they make the loop expand or...
That's why you have... It's a totally different method of making the knot. Okay, but tzitzis... People are afraid of tzitzis. So people a lot of times come to me to do... Not a lot of times, but once in a while, people come to me to fix their tzitzis or to attach a new thing of tzitzis. And say, it's so easy. No, I'd rather you do it. It's so easy. Literally, it's the easiest. I was also for many years. I didn't want to do it. I'm not so handy. I figured I would get it wrong. I took 5 minutes. You learn how to make the tzitzis. It's extremely easy. It's a good skill for everyone to have.
Except with tchelos, that becomes a little bit more.
Tchelos is a little bit more complicated. Once you get the principles down from all white tzitzis, it's not it's different rules you have to memorize how to do it. It's a little bit more complicated, but the basic technique. Is very similar. Ve'orech ritzuas harosh kidei shiakiv bo harosh v'yikshor bo hakesher me'acharav. So it has to be long enough that you have to be able to encircle the head and make the knot. V'yabo kidei lehimosach Shnei Roshi Ratsuad Keneged Tiburo. So they should go down to at least navel length. Olechol Apachos Rosh Echad Keneged Zalev Echad Veacherad Keneged Hatibur. So one should go, at the very least, one should go to the navel and one should go to the heart level. According to Kabbalah, of course, which of the two should be longer?
The right,
because right represents rachamim, mercy, divine mercy, and the left represents din, divine judgment. So therefore, the right should be longer. Umakom hanochas tefillin barosh. Where's the place that you put the tefillin on the head? Kilomer kitzitza seorshim aparshias munachos besocha hu keneged hamoach. It goes by the front of the brain. Doesn't say front of the brain, but the brain fills the whole head basically. Mokom shemocho shel tinok rofes. It's the place where in a baby, it hasn't been, the skull hasn't fused yet. So there's a place that's very soft there. So the basic area of the tefillin is at the front of the skull, the top of the skull, the place where a baby's head is still soft. V'zeh ha-perush ha-mekubalanu be'avayulato tavos bein einecha. Because what does it say also? In the Chumash it says, lo sasimu karcha bein einechem lameis. You shall not put a bald spot between your eyes as a sign of mourning. So what do you mean? So people have unibrows. So then you have hair literally between. That's not even really between your eyes. That's on top. There's no hair, mamish between your eyes on your nose. The idea is that that's a place where people often have hair, which is on the top of the head at the level that is between the eyes. So a lot of people no longer have hair or so much hair at that place. So then it has to be the place where the hair used to be and that where the baby's head would still be would be soft.
I've seen people wear like actually on their
Vamanichan beinoy nai mamish or is a machish divrei kabbalah. If you mamish put it, first of all, nobody wears a mamish between their eyes. That's where your nose is. But you put it on your forehead, right? So that's a major problem. Mishnah Berurah screams about this. That's I think there you see very few people doing it. I think in shuls like 50, 60 years ago, it used to be more common because people were less educated. But there's been a major education campaign about where to put tefillin. There are these Torah Mesorah signs everywhere about where the putting your tefillin in the correct place. And the Mishnah Berurah, the greater popularity of the Mishnah Berurah, has taught people that the tefillin are not supposed to be at all below the hairline. So it's actually interesting. Not for public consumption, but Rabbi Tzinner. He has a series called Nitei Gavriel, which brings all sorts of shitas that you never heard of. He has a whole sefer on like Upsharon and a lot of things that you never heard of. So he has in his sefer on Bar Mitzvah, he brings shitas that it's sufficient if most of the tefillin are on the correct place. So even though the Mishnah Berurah screams, again, we should follow the Mishnah Berurah, that's the Pashas and Halacha, that the screams, that if it's even, that if the tefillin go the tiniest bit below your hairline or former hairline, then it's no good, you're not yotzei to the mitzvah, it's a bracha levatala. He brings shitas that even if most of it is on the correct place, so then that's also okay. So that's not something you should do, but it's just the limud zchus that it's completely resting on your forehead, or mostly resting on your forehead. So according to everyone, that's no good. That's derech minus. That's a way of heresy. Not they're intending to be heretical, but really is not correct. So how high is it supposed to go? So according to many shitas, there's basically no limit on how high the tefillin could go. That they could go here, and that would also be okay. But others say it's supposed to be in the front half of the top of the skull. Shouldn't put it too far back. It's supposed to be on the place. The main point is that it's at the place right at the top where, again, a baby's head is still soft. The Gemara says that there's room on the head to put on two pairs of tefillin, which is why people sometimes put on Rashi or Rabbeinu Tam tefillin at the same time. You have really small tefillin, there should be enough room to put on two pairs of tefillin.
How many brachas did they make then?
One. They brought the bracha on Rashi.
Yeah.
Make the bracha on Rashi. I heard about a gadol who accidentally put on his Rabbeinu Tam tefillin first thing in the morning and he made the bracha on them by accident. So when he realized his mistake, he told his shamish that, oh, he's so happy that once in his life he gets to make the bracha on Rabbeinu Tam mm-hmm. Tefillin and fulfill the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. But he said after that, just he was trying to make the Shamash feel better that he didn't, they gave him the wrong pair of Tefillin or something. But really, said he cried for the rest of the day because he put on, he made the bracha on Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin. Okay. But yeah, the bracha would definitely only be on Rashi Tefillin. It's very similar to the rules of the arm tefillin. Mitzvah tafchav gimel, mitzvahs mezuzah. Likboa mezuzah b'mezuzahs beiseinu. We're supposed to put a mitzvah, a mezuzah on the doorpost of our house. So really, mezuzah means the doorpost. It doesn't mean the little scroll that's sitting on the doorpost. Mm-hmm. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. It has to be written on one scroll. It can't be sewn together. It can't be on two different scrolls. It's supposed to be on one scroll that you write the mezuzah, and he uses here the example of klaf, because again, what everyone was using in the times of the Sefer HaChinuch was either really klaf or had the din of klaf, which we pass in as good for all the types of stam. But really, the mezuzah, according to Moshitas, can be written on all three types, so it can be written on gvil or klaf, and the actual mitzvah, the preferable way to write a mezuzah is on duchsustas, but nobody uses duchsustas anymore, because it can, according to some shitas, it can only be used for mezuzah, and it's not made anymore. It's the two parashas that talk about a mezuzah. The first two parashas that are in Tefillin do not talk about a mezuzah. And you put it on the doorpost. What's the reasoning behind the mitzvah? We should remember at all times God when we go in and out of the house. So we have this practice nowadays that a lot of people have, that they like to kiss the mezuzah. So kissing the mezuzah is not, strictly speaking, mentioned in Chazal. But kissing the mezuzah, taking the time to kiss the mezuzah, just shows that you're paying attention. In other words, looking at it is technically enough. But most people just walk in and out of the house. They don't even necessarily notice the mezuzah. But when people get in the habit of kissing it, then they at least take a moment to reflect on what the mezuzah represents. Uch Moshe Kasav the binyan hatfillin. It's like the tefillin for your house. Uch Inyan Sha'amr Zichron Levracha b'mitzvah zo. Amr Abzeir, Amr Abmas, Amr Shmuel, mitzvah l'nicha b'tchila shlish ha'elyon. That the correct place to put the mezuzah is you divide the doorway into three, and you put it on the bottom of the upper third of the doorway. So the question is, why the point of the upper third of the bottom of the upper third of the door is that's because that's approximately eye level. That's where you're going to see the mezuzah most. So the question is, if you have an enormous doorway that's 100 feet high, so where do you put the mezuzah? So it's a machlokas rishonim. That some say no, it always has to be on the tchila shlisha elyon, but according to the accepted opinion, it should just be about shoulder height.
That's what it is, you know, when you shalim in the old city.
Right, it's around, that's not in the Tchila Shlish Aliyon, right. Right. So in some of the places in Yerushalayim, it's actually a shaila, whether it's chayav or mezuzah. First of all, it shouldn't necessarily, hold on. First of all, there's not a mashkof, a lintel on the top in a lot of the gates. Some of them, yes. Yeah, it's not so pashut that those places are even chayiv mezuzah. Also, most of the residents of the old city are goyim, so it seemingly should go by the majority that if most of the people who live in a place are Jewish, then you should put a mezuzah. If not, so not. So you have a very serious shaila actually about apartment buildings. That there are many apartment buildings in Washington Heights where the majority of residents are Jewish. So really, the door to the apartment building should have a mezuzah. So why don't people put a mezuzah? Maybe they're concerned that the goyim will try to rip it down, or they'll treat it with disrespect. But
landlord won't allow them to. You know.
Yeah. So I once asked someone, not a normative posik, but we're just talking and learning. So I said, "So what happens if the landlord doesn't allow you to put a mezuzah on a building that's mostly Jewish?" So he says, "I don't know if you're allowed to live there." It's maybe a little extreme, but yeah, it's been tried many times, even at in the buildings that currently are formerly owned by YU, where the vast majority of the residents are Jewish. People have tried to put up mezuzahs, and the goyim take it down.
This is superstitious or something.
Oh, some people dafka want, even some goyim even want the dafka mezuzah because they feel like it's a protection. Okay, that's not really correct. The goyish house is not supposed to have a mezuzah.
Is this mezuzah on this door? Is that too high? Because it's less. Some people say
it's too small. Forget about the height. I don't know if the scroll is kosher. Again, in theory, it's possible to write a mezuzah that small. In the ancient times, again, when the script was a little bit less complicated, so mezuzahs used to be smaller generally than they are today. But today, mezuzahs.
No one lives here, so it's not chayav anywhere, right?
I don't know. What about all the kids who live here?
Can't live here.
The kids that are during the day, they have kids living here most of the day.
It's only where you live?
Yeah, so technically, as the Sefer Chinuch will say later, yeah. So technically a shul is not chayav in mezuzah, but the reason is that people spend sometimes, as Beis Medrash, some shittas hold that is chayav in mezuzah because people spend all day there. So that's basically where they're living for the day. But a shul, people just go into daven. And leave, and it's only used for davening. It's not used for a chassidish beis medrash or a shtibel as chayiv and mezuzah because they have events there. They have the tish and they have eating and they have lots of so yeah. But a regular shul, in theory, is not chayiv mezuzah, and the minhag is to put a mezuzah in all these places nowadays without a bracha because people spend more time, I think, in shul than they used to. So that's not too high, no. The bottom of the top third thing is only l'chatchila. But if the mezuzah is anywhere within the top third, except it has to be a tefach away from the very top, then it's still kosher. Amar Rabba mitzvah l'anicha b'tefach ha-somuch l'rishu sarabim. Also, this is a rule that a lot of people don't know, which is that the mezuzah is actually supposed to be as close as possible to the front of the doorpost. So a lot of people, when you have a very wide doorpost, so they think, oh, it looks nicer if the mezuzah is smack in the middle. Mm. But it's really not true. It's kosher, but you have it that way. It is kosher, but ideally the mitzvah is supposed to be on the outermost part because you're supposed to see the mezuzah, you're supposed to encounter the mezuzah very first thing. Also, the idea is that whatever... The mezuzah provides a certain amount of spiritual protection. So the farther out it is, so the more protection you get. Because if you put it in the middle, so then the outer part of the doorpost won't be subject to the protection. But there is this idea, yeah.
Interesting, the same mezuzah does not say anything about protection.
I think later he might, because I've been looking at this yesterday. Hold on. Well, we know the Sefer HaChinuch is a more rationalistic bent. But the Rambam doesn't like
he wouldn't even diagnose heart conditions, but by checking your mezuzahs, that sort of thing, right?
So. Look, if you're time to check your mezuzahs, it can't hurt. But there are weird stories, I have to tell you. Mm-hmm. There are very weird stories about people having, like you say, a heart condition, and there was a psul in the word al levavchem or something in the mezuzah. Okay, whatever, take it or leave it. You can't hurt to make sure that your mezuzahs are good and proper. My time, Rabbanan Amri Kechi, the tifka be mezuzah miyad. He leaves out this idea of the protection, and he says that you should encounter the mezuzah first thing.